On this week's show, action choreographer, motion capture pioneer, the Mortal Kombat legend himself, Master Piscina, is here. And we totally forgot to wear our cups. Speaking of Mortal Kombat, MK11 has got a nutty, nutty premium edition up for grabs. But is it worth it? I'm sure Andy will let us know. Octopath Traveler embarks on its journey to PC, and finally, the Hype Zone throws party in the best places possible. Your pants. This is Nintendo Dual Screens episode 94. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Nintendo Dual Screens episode 94 for the week of April 15th, 2019. Andy is editing the cold open now for some reason after he had a typo where he wrote the Hype Zone throws party. He's going to write a party now. I see him doing it in the doc as we speak because he cannot be wrong. Speaking of wrong, this whole show is wrong. Everything's wrong, but I am so excited. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, is my partner in crime and my best friend. He is the other half of the Dual Screens. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I want to say off the bat, unlike last week's pun-heavy show.
Pun, yeah, it was a lot of puns.
Any and all references to balls, nuts, gonads, testicles, cojones, giblets, Diggleberries, family jewels, and brass clankers will be left for the intro. So that's
good.
It.
Good. I'm glad we got that out of our system. And Master Piscina, you have no idea what you've gotten yourself into. That is right. The legend himself probably played the most video game characters in one video game. Master Piscina is here. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Andy. Oh, Steve,
we are so damn excited for this. You have no idea, Andy. So little sneaky thing here, listener. If you go to patreon.com/NDS podcast and you give us, I think it's $5. Yeah, $5 gets you the pre and post show. And during the pre show of this episode, Master Piscina called Andy on his cell phone, and Andy was giddy like a little schoolgirl. Let me tell you, it was adorable.
He got caged.
I got caged.
You did. You got starstruck by Johnny Cage. That's so great. For those of you that are new to Nintendo Dual Screens podcast, this is a show where Andy and I, and almost always a guest from the industry, go over the Nintendo news that you absolutely need to know about, and we have an open discussion about Nintendo's past, present, and future. Nintendo Dual Screens posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including iHeartRadio and Spotify. And as I had mentioned, you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/NDSpodcast, just like our Patreon producers, Alex Gonzalez and Gavin McCrinn. Gentlemen, we cannot continue to grow without your support and appreciate it ever so much. And Alex, I want to bring something. You had a conversation with me, I think it was right after our PAX coverage, and you had a lot of kind things to say about where you see the show going and where you see Dual Screens going, and Nintendo Dual Screens in particular. And I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for those kind words, and we do look forward to having you along for the long haul and to see where this grows in the next 3 to 5 years. We're very excited to have you. That you have our backs. Remember, folks, you could back us for as little as $1, and that $1 gets you one bonus episode a month called the Super NDS Pro Super Show, and you also get access to our super top secret Discord channel, which only our listeners and indie developers are a part of. If you want to email the show, you could do so at feedback@ndspodcast.com. Now that all that stuff is out of the way, Andy, I know you're excited. You probably already have cotton mouth, don't you?
A little bit, yes. Yeah. But I'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Before you have a little bit of time to warm up, because yes, before I'm we good. Get I'm into good. The lead I'm story, before we get into the lead story, before we get into the Nintendo News Report, I want you, Andy, to start us off. Tell us what you've been playing lately.
Oh, I found a great game on the eShop over the weekend called Mechstermination Force. Oh. Mechsterminate. It is a 2D side-scrolling boss rush title. It's basically Contra, but all boss fights.
I like that. I like that cool. concept.
And, Steven, fun fact about this game. You can buy weapons, and one is called the spread gun.
That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. Master Piscina, we have a, or I'm going to call you just Master for short. that is an ongoing debate, because clearly an S, a weapon that has the letter S that is a spread fire in the real world would be a shotgun. I feel like correct. That's right. See, he says right, and he's the master, so we correct. Move on. I digress. Right.
We're so going by instruction manuals. Listen, it's the whole debate, so let's not get into it now.
Okay.
I'm right and you're wrong. We can move on.
This has been an ongoing debate for about 75 episodes, Master. Just letting you know. Okay. So you're enjoying it?
Yes, I recommend it.
Cool.
Great game. It's a little hard, but you know, most games of that nature are pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. I did almost bite through my controller at one point, but hey, them's the breaks.
Them's are the breaks.
But yeah, if you like frustration rage at the low cost of $15, go for it.
Sure. So I am going to go off of a recommendation that is not my own. This is from somebody that writes for us. Harry did a review of a game. Hold on. A game called Feather, which is, it seems like a really, really cool experience. So I'm telling you, I do not have hands-on experience with this, but it really, his review really piqued my interest. And I definitely want to pick this game up. Essentially, Feather is a game where you just explore an island as a bird. That's all like you Joust? Do.
Like Joust?
No, you just explore. There's no combat. There are no goals. There's no enemies. There's no prey. There's nothing. All it is you flying around a beautifully rendered world, and you just fly to very chill music. There's an online mode where your friends can join you, and you guys can just fly as a flock together and just kind of just chill out. And it seems like the perfect experience for somebody who might have a high stress job or plays high stress video games, maybe on a stream, and doesn't want to break their controller, so will instead switch to just maybe flying around for a little bit. Anyway, I digress. It seems like a really, really fun, chill, beautifully made, beautifully designed video game. So that is what I am going to recommend everybody pick up, including myself. I will pick it up as well. Master, have you been playing anything interesting lately that you would like to tell our people at home about, or Andy and I?
Actually, I haven't played a game in a while. It's just been busy. You know, school keeps me busy. Teach martial arts. Master Piscina's Martial Art Academy. So do that and, do a lot of events. Been going to a lot of events.
Sure.
So I haven't played that many games. Usually I like to play single person shooter or sure. role player. I really try to stay away from fighting games.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to bring us to our lead story, which is all about you, Master Piscina, because the resume is, especially as it comes to Mortal Kombat, which we are celebrating all month, Mortal Kombat, because the release of Mortal Kombat 11 is impending. So last week we had Tony Chung, who is actually the model who's playing Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat 11. We had him on the show last week. So now we have you, the OG ninja actor, you know, whatever. I don't know the actual words because words are hard. But I do want to I want to start with a very simple question that I feel like it could go one of two ways. Either you're going to be modest and you're going to give us the PR answer, or you're going to tell us the dirt. I want to know, how much ass can you kick?
That's why I don't like to play fighting games, because one, I wouldn't lose. I would never lose. Because And two, they don't fight the way I want them to fight. So I just kind of get mad and I'll be throwing stuff. And who's ever in the room, I'll friggin' just manhandle a little bit or things like that. But in reality, just get them all together and let's just get it over with right away.
I know it's a childish thing to ask, but when you have somebody who has been you've been a sneaky part of our lives for like, I mean, you were in Turtles 2. You're just kind of synonymous with the stuff I grew up with as a martial artist and all that stuff. And so the child in me just wants to know, like, okay, if like 13 foot soldiers come up on you and, or like we're going out where you and I are having a good time and somebody at the bar bumps into us and the guy and I stand up and then the guy stands up and he's really big and then I have Master Piscina behind me. Can I count on Master Piscina to just annihilate these dudes? That's what I need to know as a child in a 32-year-old body.
Quick. Okay, here we go with the quick story. So
yes, Andy, I got a quick story out of him. Let's go.
Love it. Tobias, myself, Rich, and a few of, I think John Vogel was there, maybe the guy who did the backgrounds, magnificent backgrounds on MK. We were out one time at a bar, and John goes up to get a drink, and he's getting a drink, and there's this really big guy like by the bar, and he just wants to fight anybody. So he's pushing everybody around. And he pushed John like away from the bar. And John's like a peaceful guy and really quiet and stuff like that. And he kind of just, John just looked at him. And all of a sudden, you know, I see him do that. And I fly across the room. And this guy turns around and starts to swing at me. He was maybe like 6'3", you know, decent weight, 6'3". He took a swing at me. I ducked under it. I hit him pretty hard. I saw his eyes roll in the back of his head, and I didn't hit him again because I was like, oh, this guy's already unconscious. And as he's falling over, out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody doing a jumping knee, and it's Rich DiVizio, Kano, flying through the air. He hit this, and I seen him out of the corner of my eye, and I felt like I was in a movie. No! Because he's already done. You know, one hit, I just hit him in the jaw just right. He was going down, and Rich knees this guy, flying me to the face. And I was like, oh my God, he killed this guy. But anyway, it was really cool. The bouncers bought us drinks, and it was just an awesome to see. So yes, I have your back. I will have your back.
Andy, that might have been, we can end here. We could just, all right, this has been episode 94.
That's the show.
I mean,
a loop.
Before I give it to you, Andy, because I know that you have just a million questions.
Chomping at the bit here, Steven.
I know, buddy. I know. But it's my final question here. So, and this is to piggyback off that story. What, like, before Mortal Kombat and leading up to Mortal Kombat, did you have this reputation already? Or was it not a reputation that you're going to kick everybody's ass, but just like that you are very good at what you do. Did they approach you for that, or was it something that you like auditioned for and like showed your skill and then it kind of snowballed from there? Or was the momentum already in place by, cause this is what, by 1990,
89, we started doing it. And winter when we first pitched. Okay. So just to know, when I was younger, there was a group of friends who would get together, and they were not only martial artists, but DJs, regular artists, break dancers. So there was this creative group that would get together. And one of the people of that group was John Tobias. So I already had known John Tobias for years before Mortal Kombat. So during those times we used to goof around and say, John would be like, oh, I'm going to do a martial art movie. I'm going to do a martial art movie. We tried to do one once. It didn't work out. That's another long story. But anyway, years later, John calls me up and he's just like, hey, I want to do a martial art game. Will you help me pitch the idea to Midway? So we kind of snuck into Midway and videotaped myself, Rich and my brother Carlos fighting on videotape. And John drew some stuff, and he presented this idea of a fighting game, which later would be called Mortal Kombat. He presented that to Midway. So we were like on the ground floor of presenting this game to before anybody else at Midway. So it was myself, Tobias, Rich Divizio, and Carlos Pacino were like the original conception of MK.
Andy.
Oh my God. It's just like, that was kind of a, got to take a pause there. Cause that's a lot of fun stuff in one little story. How did you sneak into Midway? I just want to piggyback off what you just said.
Okay. Because I do martial arts and I still work out, but at the time I used to work out really early. I'd get up at like 4 o'clock to do a workout. And then I'd do another one at around noon. And then I'd work out at night. So John was like, "Hey, I want you to come in, but I don't want anybody I want to keep it secret." Basically, he didn't want anybody to steal his idea of a fighting game. So he's like, "Show up to Midway like 9 o'clock at night when everybody's gone. And then we're going to find some place and we're going to film this stuff." So that's when we say sneak in. That's what it was. He didn't want, he wanted to do the presentation. He didn't want people to leak out that, oh, he was working on a fighting game.
Whoa. Just like a bunch of ninjas would.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and actually we had a chance to give our ideas for the game. Like the Lin Kuei, that was my idea. I insisted because we weren't really getting paid a lot. John was like, "Well, what do you want to do for the game? What do you want in the game?" And I was like, "Oh, you have to have the Lin Kuei in the game." And Tobias is like, "Lin Kuei, I never heard of them." I was like, "Yeah, they're ninjas, Chinese ninjas, and you're not supposed to hear about them." So basically he was just like, well, where can I do the research? I was like, "Well, I got a book." And then he was just like, "Well, let me borrow the book." And, you know, I collect comics, so you never let your friend, because the comic's going to come back all wrinkled, or maybe you won't even get the comic back. Right. So I was just goofing around. I was like, "No, you got to buy your own Lin Kuei book. It's called The Art of the Vagabond." So I took him to a martial art place to buy the book so he can do research to put in the Lin Kuei. But that was my idea, to have the Lin Kuei, or how they look right now in Mortal Kombat is my. So every time I see it, I'm like, "Oh, that's my idea."
So, okay, so this was, it was a pitch that you made with Tobias and Divizio. So,
and my brother.
Kind of walk us through how this became just a bunch of guys with a dream to make a video game and pitching it to Midway. What was it like when the call came, when it was a reality to, yes, we're going to greenlight this and make it into a proper arcade game?
First of all, we were pitching this game and it was only going to be 200 cabinets. And originally, everyone at Midway said no. So that includes the guy who's in charge of it right now.
Oh,
he didn't think it was a good idea. But they liked our idea of a fighting game, and they were like, "Oh, that idea is like good. We're going to try to get Van Damme to do a fighting game." So what we call Mortal Kombat now was canceled, and they were going to pursue Jean-Claude Van Damme to do a mainstream video game similar to Karate Fighter, where you walk around and people jump out and you beat them up.
Sure.
So when that fell through, Rich bugged John to ask Midway to go back to our original idea.
Okay.
So then John was just like, John asked, "Hey, since, you know, we can't do that game, we need a game to work on. Let me and my friends work on this game." So Midway said yes. So John and I started working on what now we call Mortal Kombat.
Oh God,
that's incredible. And wow. And it's ironic because later Van Damme plays Guile in Street Fighter, and then they make Street Fighter the movie, the game, in the style of Mortal Kombat.
And it was atrocious in every way, shape, and form.
Like the same style. That's ironic. It's about 6 years too late, but ironic nonetheless.
Right.
Yeah.
So 200 cabinets. It's a pretty modest amount of cabinets. At what point did you say to yourself, you know, through development and when it was actually released to the public, did you see that the fuse had been lit and this was going to be a huge, huge hit for Midway?
Well, when we started filming for the game, because most of the ideas came from us filming the game, because again, there was no motion capture back then, right, like we know it. There wasn't even Photoshop. So everything was very primitive and we had to find a way to do it. Like Tobias and I spent 4 or 5 8-hour days going every single move I can think of and trying to adjusting them so we can put into the game. Like an actual uppercut that you use, we were, after watching it, we're like, that's too short. We got to make it bigger. You know, so we would do falling different ways, all this stuff, every different way. And I think finally when everyone else saw the video, you know, the hours and hours of videos that we shot, they were like, holy cow, this is kind of cool. Because originally, like I said, they said no to it. They didn't think it was a good idea. But when they saw it visually, we started getting like, oh, it's going to be cool. This is going to be a cool game.
So this is definitely an ignorant question as far as martial arts goes, but you do play multiple characters with different styles. Are those styles that you were kind of creating on the fly, or were they very specific disciplines that you knew how to do did you kind of create them from scratch?
I generalized them. So they are styles, but, in China, Chinese martial arts, the styles are divided into three regions and then two categories. So the regions are Northern, Southern, and Northwestern. And the categories are internal and external. Though I did not use those two categories, we wanted to make sure that each character in the first game, if you really look at everyone in the first game, everyone punches a little bit different. We tried to do everything a little. Each person each person put their personality into it. So like Johnny Cage, Scorpion, and Sub-Zero are really like different parts of my personality and alter ego. it's kind of weird. But if you were actually watching us film it, you'd be like, holy crap, that's, you are Sub-Zero. You know, it's bizarre. Tony Marquez, Kung Lao, has a catchphrase, the personality and the pixels. He's like, man, ooh, when you see that, when you see the pixels, you see there's something in it. There's something that draws you to it, that personality. You know, professional photographers have that gift where they can take a picture of somebody and something gets drawn out of it.
Right.
You know, or that model, or they put that, you could feel it. So when we were shooting, we did that stuff. So back to your question, because I babble a lot.
We love the babble.
John took the arcade to test on Super Bowl Sunday, 1990 Super Bowl Sunday. And, you know, he put it up. A couple hours later, he got a call from the arcade and they were like, hey, there's something wrong with your machine. So John went in and he's like, there's nobody, hardly anybody in the arcade. And he goes, the Super Bowl Sunday, nobody's really there. And he's like, everything seems to be right. But he opens the coin and it's filled.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it stops playing when the coin's filled because it's about the quarters. So he empties it. And about 2 hours later, the guy calls again. And he goes back in the quarter. And he's like, there's not that many people in this arcade game. And he's like, and the quarters were filled. And he goes, so he did that third time during the test in one day, and he called me up right away and he's like, oh my God, the quarters are, and I was like, what? And he goes, there's hardly anybody in there, but apparently everybody's pouring all their quarters into our game.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
So this is going to be, he's like, this is going to be way, way out there. You know, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be the best fighting game ever.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, it was in the pizzeria side by side with Street Fighter 2. And I was like, this looks hella good. I mean, for the blood alone. I was into the blood and violence part of it, but it just seemed like the better game to play compared to Street Fighter, in my opinion, because I was a huge fan of Mortal Kombat. But yeah, that is an amazing, like, knowing that it was at that level already, like, keep getting quarters and emptying the machine over and over again.
A lot of us think it was just the perfect, you know, because it was such a low budget game, it was like the perfect combination. You know, I got to do all the martial art moves and choreography. Tobias was the lead and the creator of Mortal Kombat. And then, you know, on the fifth day when we asked Ed to help us, he came in and he just made slight adjustments so he could program the hitboxes. And then he really listened to our ideas as opposed to the first meeting we had when he didn't like our ideas. But now he was open to the ideas that we were giving him. We wanted to do this. We wanted to have these combinations. We wanted blood. We wanted all this stuff. And, you know, he was just like, okay, with the videotape and then hearing ideas, it kind of clicked in his mind, like, holy cow, these guys are really coming up with a good game.
Was the blood aspect ever at any point off the table, or was midway, did they stand by having such a violent game in their library?
No, we were only going to make 200 games.
Right.
So John wanted it to be the blood to be battle, your battle worn. You just started out regular, and as the game progressed, you get more bloody and your clothes get torn, and it just gets more and more violent as the game goes on. But naturally, drawing all that stuff takes a lot of time, and that didn't go into the game. You know, we had so many ideas with Mortal Kombat 1 that I see them now in 10. I see ideas. I was like, oh, I came up with that idea. Now they put it in 9. And oh, we were going to do that in 10. I mean, we were going to do that, and now it's in 10. We had so many, brutalities. We wanted you to have 3 different fatalities, including a brutality where you beat the guy falls to. I was like, oh, it'd be cool if the guy, once it reaches a level where you're really low, that he just falls to his knees and then you just pound on him and then you kill him. And now we're seeing like 11, all these brutal stuff. I'm like, that's what we wanted to do in number 1, you know? So we had a lot of ideas.
That's like full circle. Like the things that you couldn't do due to the limitations of the hardware, you know, 30 plus years ago, can now be a reality in the 11th installment of the series.
Which is
nuts. Did you think it would go this far?
No.
Like 1 was amazing and 2 was even better, but we're talking 11 installments over a 30-year period. Did you foresee that?
No, I didn't even foresee 2, because again, when we were going to make 200 arcade cabinets, and literally 200, because I was, at the time when we were doing that, I was like, John, we should make 201, because if you give me an arcade cabinet, I'll let you guys come out with make more cabinets than 200. And John and Ed were both like, no, we're only making 200 and that's it. And then later on, they came out with, they pre-sold 10,000.
Oh, God. Holy crap. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, did you get one eventually? I would hope so.
No, I did. I did not. And that's why I fell away from the game. My contract was small. I was going to make 200. I asked them for, I was like, hey, you're going to make 10,000. Don't worry. We're going to give you a bonus. They kept on saying, giving me the bonus. It's going to go to home. We're going to give you a bonus. Eventually, when I had a meeting, they asked me, hey, do you have any of this stuff in writing? And I was like, no, you guys face to face, you told me that I would get paid from, you know, my ideas and being in this game. And in the end, that's why I left, because they didn't want to pay me.
Wow.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. They sure use my ideas till today, but paying me for them, no. So be careful for your listeners. You should really be careful. Even if your friend's is in charge of the game, that doesn't really mean he owns the game or you know, you could get cut right out of it.
Does that affect your views on the business as a whole, or was it kind of, I mean, it seems like you kind of stepped away from it altogether, but did that soil you on the whole industry, or just?
Yeah. I didn't start going to events or even embracing that I helped create Mortal Kombat till maybe about 7 years ago.
Wow.
I just stayed away from MK. You know, it was just like, oh, those, you know, it was just not a good subject with me.
Sure. Yeah. A wound that had some salt thrown in it kind of thing.
Yeah. And everybody knows out there, you could just do it that Ed and I don't get along now. And that's part of that reason is because, you know, he was one of the higher ups. I think he should have went to bat for us a little bit more.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's unfortunate. Maybe somewhere down the line, hatchets can be buried and fatalities can be executed.
Yeah.
So to put things into perspective, like I wasn't in 1990 and 1991, I was too young to be going to arcades, let alone going to an arcade to play Mortal Kombat. But when it came to Super Nintendo, I was definitely of the age where I started to kind of understand those concepts a little bit more. And we did own it, Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2. 2 was the one that I really think was the one I grew up playing the most. But do you have any information on how those conversations went with Nintendo at that point? Because it is so opposite of what Nintendo was all about. Up to that point, I mean, there was the controversy with the violence. There was the Supreme Court and just all that craziness. Like, what was that like from your perspective of things?
Well, when all the stuff about the violence was going on, John and Ed couldn't really respond because they worked for Midway proper. Sure. But I did not, and I have as you guys can see, I have a big mouth. So John or Ed would call me up and say, hey, this news station or this news media, something wants an interview, and we can't really say anything, but you need to speak out, you know, on our kind of unofficial behalf of how, you know, we didn't, you know, the stuff you see in Mortal Kombat, we borrowed from things we wanted, you know, we borrowed, you know, Sub-Zero's move from Predator that was already out, you know, Rich borrowed the heart rip from Indiana Jones. You know, sure. I borrowed things from anime comic books.
Sure.
So we borrowed ideas that were already out there, and now they're saying it was too violent when those ideas are older than our game. So, you know, I would, chat with people or, you know, news stations and newspapers, and just tell them that, no, we didn't. It's entertainment, you know, and the violence that is in the game, we borrowed it from it was inspired from other things during that genre, during that era.
You just kind of put it in one very, very visceral package, which, you know, 8-year-olds can beat the shit out of their, you know, 12-year-old brothers or mostly vice versa, and rip their hearts out of their chest.
Trouble.
Yeah, it was all my parents. Luckily for me, they never really censored violence. Typical American family, they censored sexual content over violent content,
right?
For whatever reason, whatever. For years I didn't know that the painting scene in Titanic actually happened. It was always fast forwarded in my house. I was told to leave, go get something from the kitchen, and then it was fast forwarded. But yeah, as a kid, you know, seeing that, and then of course doing the blood code on Super Nintendo because you couldn't have blood, you know, or whatever it was.
Yeah, they had to add it. It really affected their numbers. You know, the original didn't have any. Number one, there was no blood in it. It was sweat, right?
Yeah. It was implied that it was sweat or spit or whatever the hell it was. It was gray, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But you created.
Kano had the Kano had the, like, he pulled the black heart out of your chest.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they took out the, because doesn't he take a bite out of it?
No, yeah. That was never a thing.
Yeah. Actually, we filmed that. Filmed originally, after Rich rips her heart out, he bit it. And then John was like, you can't do that.
And then, I remember seeing a video of like grabbing and then doing like a quick like this,
yeah,
and then holding it up, you know. Yeah. And yeah, I remember
that's,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of what he did. And then, you know, the thing was, John was like, just hold it up. And I was like, oh, hold it up. And it's still beating like in Indiana Jones. And, you know, we would just, you know, that's how collaborate on ideas. One would be out there and we would just keep it going.
Amazing.
See, now in MK10, there's a fatality where he pulls out your heart and he squeezes the blood into his mouth.
That's
fatality.
Cool. That's,
yeah,
cool.
that's kind of the original concept is, yeah, eating the heart, you know, is that. But, you know, it, like you said, it all comes around.
How long was the process for you guys? Like, you were a relatively small team. How long was it from when you got the green light to cabinets or in that the arcades?
I think 9 months.
Wow. Holy crap. Going,
I would kill for that short of development time span in this day and age.
Nothing, yeah, there's no. You essentially invented a genre and a technology, and came out with a fully fleshed out blockbuster video game in 9 months. That's insane. That's
crazy.
Yeah,
everyone was on fire. A lot of creative input. During that project, we have a lot of unsung heroes. You know, we have programmers who did programming, who contributed that. We had a guy who designed originally we wanted it to look like rotoscoping, but we couldn't do that. So he tried to design something along those lines, and which came out to look that later on they did the catchphrase digitized. But really, you know, that everything was just like, you know, we were trying to do something and we came up with something else.
Yeah, it was almost like stop motion, like photography, but yeah, like, but with these digitized graphics kind of like painted over it a little bit. And like,
for those fans, Ralph Bakshi did Lord of the Rings back in the, I think it was the 60s or 70s. Mm-hmm. Where they did that, they took animation, they put it over real people. They did the orcs like that.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, in this cartoon thing. So John wanted to do that. And two, we wanted to pay homage to Ray Harryhausen with the Sinbad series, you know, with the claymation and animation. So that's what we came up with. He came up with Goro. We were just trying to get everything in we could in one game.
My final question, and then I'll kick it to Andy, for which I'm sure he's got a couple more, but how integral to martial arts is the nut punch?
Use it whenever you can.
That's what I figured. So one would say it's not the coward's way out.
No, because in traditional martial art, one of my quick story, man, here we go again.
Yeah.
I was working out and I was like, I asked my master, I was like, master, what is, you know, he's a Chinese guy, Master Go Jinhua. And I was like, man, master, what is like, what is the best technique? What do you think is the best technique? And he's like, you know, in Chinese martial arts, you know what the best technique is? I was kind of listening to him, like, what? I'm going to learn the secret now. He goes, you get your enemy to go into a closed space and you get about 30 feet up and you store a bunch of boulders. And when they come by, you just fling them on their heads. That is the best move. And then I just kind of looked at him. And he goes, because in martial arts, it's about killing and taking their stuff. It's easier to take the stuff off of a dead body than it is a living body. So just kill everybody. And I was just kind of heartbroken because I was just like kind of, you know, I wanted it to be, you know, this, everybody thinks martial arts are honorable and stuff like that. And in reality, martial arts is not that. You fight to the death, and whatever it takes to win is how it goes.
So you wanted like deep and profound, but you got fight dirty.
Yeah. Well, no, because I learned that there's no such thing as fight dirty. So I got
true,
even,
yeah.
So I got a, I got a deep and profound thing, because he was just like, he goes, in other words, don't fight unless you are prepared to,
right.
to die or kill somebody.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, holy cow. And he goes, yep. He goes, that's it. He goes, if you don't want to die, don't fight. If you don't want to kill anybody, don't fight.
And thus the bar guy learned his lesson.
Yes.
So I think for my final question, before you move on from this segment, you know, you're involved with Mortal Kombat 1, Mortal Kombat 2. You know, you met a lot of people who worked on the games that you still maintain to this day a good relationship with. What is, it's a hard question, but try to find an answer somewhere. What is one of your fondest memories working on this franchise?
It's always the, because we were always goofing around. So the whole making of 1 and 2 was, is like one big fond memory, goofing around type of thing. Quick, another quick story.
That's what I'm trying
goofing
to get
around. Goofing around. So John, we're filming Scorpion. And John is like, you know what? Tilt your head back and push it and then come forward and pretend you're shooting out flames. And I looked at John and I was like, that's a dumb idea, because if I do that, my whole face mask will catch on fire. And then John is like, you smart ass, pull the mask down and then breathe fire. And then Rich was like, you know what would be really cool? If he pulls the mask off. And Rich was always afraid of skeletons. So Rich was like, if he pulls the mask off and he's a fucking skeleton that breathes fire.
Holy shit.
So from John's breathing fire to me being a smart ass to Rich doing that. And that's how like the whole creation was, that type of thing of us goofing around and just coming up with crazy stuff.
And thus the most iconic fatality ever was born, essentially.
Yeah, from, you know, yeah, oh, he's going to breathe fire. Oh, no, he's not going to breathe fire because his whole head will be on fire. Well, then pull the mask down. So we would do that constantly. Like, I did the split. I actually did the real split nut punch like 50, 60 times, different ways. And then John looked at me and he's like, yeah, I think the third one was the good one, but I thought you should just keep doing them. And I kind of looked at him because, man, it makes your legs sore to keep doing the splits over and over like 60 times in like
sure.
10 minutes. You know, it's like, holy cow. But yeah, but he just tortured me just because he could, you know, or just like during the game when we were figuring out falls, I would do all the falls on concrete.
Ow.
And then at the end of the day, I was like, John, I don't think anybody else is going to fall, you know, on concrete. He's like, no, we got mats. We'll pull the mats out for them. After I did, I spent the whole day flipping and falling on cement.
You should write a book called, like, what if the story of Mortal Kombat? How about we try this, the story of Mortal Kombat? That's interesting, man. It's... Game development has certainly come a long way since then, but I'm envious of those experiences that you were able to have.
It's like the Wild West of game development back then, where anything went, and it was any idea was up for grabs, basically, at that
yeah.
point.
We didn't have anybody, no egos. The only...
Right, exactly.
We all had an ego, and we all wanted to one-up each other with different moves, make it better. But it was all in trying to make the best game we could.
Right.
Yeah, that's the right kind of ego you want to have. That's fun. A trick.
Well, that was a blast talking to you about that. That's fantastic. Andy,
this could go on forever.
We could. We could do the whole show like this, but we do have to go through some news.
We got some boring news to get through, I guess.
We got some news. All right, so it's time to get into the Nintendo News Report. And Andy, we're going to start off with some kind of weird news. Octopath Traveler is officially coming to PC on June 7th, which was once thought to be a Nintendo Switch exclusive, is now officially not a Nintendo exclusive. What are your thoughts on that, Andy?
Yeah, we touched on this last week, and we kind of called it. I'm more interested in knowing how it's going to work with a Nintendo exclusive going to a different platform, because we've seen cases where other games are brought to the Switch and they'll do amazing, like Blossom Tales, like Saved from Bankruptcy because of the Nintendo Switch, essentially.
Right.
But now we're seeing a game that was on the Switch going to a different platform. I want to see what those sales look like. That should be a really fun metric to track.
That doesn't seem like it would work.
Right?
You know, because Switch is a very active game, and then you're going to take it to a different platform where you're kind of not active?
Yeah, it's weird. It's Octopath, when it was announced, got a lot of fanfare because it was kind of Square Enix's return to their roots of the JRPG, the 2D JRPG, and they had a very interesting art style and all this stuff. And if it was at home on the Nintendo Switch, PC gamers do love those games too. But I feel like the audience that is on the PC probably already played this on the Switch. I don't see them making those purchases backwards. I see them doing it the other way, which has been successful for most of the devs. Okay, so totally not fake news coming up next. Andy, take it away.
Right. So, see, this is why you don't buy every rumor that you see on the internet, kids. This is why you take everything with a grain of salt. You can trust, but always verify. And this is in that category. So apparently there was a rumor way back that Nintendo approached Criterion Games to make a new F-Zero title. Mm-hmm. And then the head of the company said, in not so many words, nope, that was fake. Completely false.
Well, kids, what did you
learn? I mean, we love a new F-Zero game. I love that franchise.
Sure.
But wishful thinking doesn't make for new games now, does it?
Breaks hearts.
It does break hearts.
That it does.
Kano. They got Kano'd.
So this next story I threw in the doc, Disney Plus revealed that they are coming in, was it June, I believe. I should probably open this article so I could actually read it. Here it is. Okay. Well, it doesn't say the date in the article. Thanks for nothing. Essentially, they're showing all of the platforms that Disney Plus, which is the new Disney streaming service coming in the summer, there's a picture of a Nintendo Switch in the picture, but they haven't officially announced anything of the sort. The only platforms that they have announced on are PS4. And I think that's it. Not even the Vita, just the PS4. So yeah, they updated this article here to say it appears there might be some confusion with Disney Plus on Switch. The above image, which is the image that Disney put out, comes straight from Disney, so they clearly have intentions of the service hitting the Switch. With that said, it seems the only 100% confirmed deal right now is with Sony and the PS4. Details aren't clear, but apparently Disney is in active negotiations right now to get the app on Switch. And that's it. So that would be cool. Where's Netflix?
Yeah, let's get that first on the Switch, and then worry about Disney's service.
Well, Disney's service is going to be huge, because now they're pulling in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they're making those into TV shows, because now wow. Hawkeye is getting his own TV show.
Oh, word? I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, Hawkeye is going to get his own series.
But no movie,
now.
Huh?
No. I mean, movie? His story cannot be contained in a movie, Andy. Hawkeye is...
If they can do a Black Widow movie, they can do a Hawkeye movie.
They didn't do a Black Widow movie.
But they're going to a Black Widow movie.
Well, until it's filmed. The plans change all the time.
This is true.
Agreed.
And see? Plans change. All right,
breaking another heartbreaker,
and another heart. The hearts are being broken. One heart's
bare, master, too much.
Yeah.
And now, to round out the Nintendo News Report, we have some Mortal Kombat 11 news, which is absolutely ludicrous, and it should be the hype zone. But it is not, because the hype zone is even hypier than that. Mortal Kombat 11 has a $100 premium edition, which isn't crazy, because there are some premium editions, like Darksiders 3, that was $400, that had all sorts of statues and whatnot. But here is what the Mortal Kombat 11 Premium Edition comes with. It comes with the game, obviously. The Combat Pack, which I believe is the... what's the Combat Pack? Oh, that's the costumes, correct?
And the DLC fighter. It's all the add-ons, basically. Like the,
oh, right, there it is. Okay, they actually, in the article, they explained it here. This is Nintendo Life is listing this. Yeah. So the Combat Pack includes 6 new DLC playable characters released over a period of time. 1 week early access to the DLC characters, exclusive to the Combat Pack owners. So a week before those characters come out, you could play test them or try them out. That's 7 like exclusive Bragg, character right? skins and 7 exclusive sets of gear. So nothing physical in the premium edition of the game. You're really just pre-buying all the DLC, essentially. It's like buying the game and the season pass in one package, which I imagine right. The season pass wouldn't be more than $40 anyway.
The only perks here I'm seeing is the 1 week early access to DLC fighters, again, to brag about it to all your friends or on the online matches, like, hey, I got so-and-so before you did, haha. Mm-hmm. And there's the Green gear, shot. Yes, there's the gear and the character skins as well, which right. historically, these things that were once exclusive end up being on sale later down the line at some point at a much higher markup, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, I think if you're a diehard fan and really want to get all the stuff as soon as possible, this is a good deal for $100.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna admit right now that I did pre-order this bundle because I am a fanatic and I want all the things as soon as possible.
So clearly they're not gonna be short of any money. So fucking pay Master Piscina, you cowards!
Yeah,
thank you.
Pay
Master. Get over here. Ooh, that was a fatality.
pay up, you cowards. Speaking of cowards, let's get into the hype zone because shit is about to get hype, Andy. Holy
cowards. This is the best news of the day.
No, I'm talking about the cowards that can't handle this news. That's what I'm talking about.
Those this cowards. Was the first bit of news that I put on this week's doc.
I'm sure it was.
I saw it, loved it, threw it on there immediately.
Want more of it. Got it.
You guys. We're talking Mortal Kombat here, other great games like Octopath Traveler.
Yep.
They really can't compare.
No, they can't.
To what I think is the ultimate game ever created in the history of gaming.
Wow.
That's right. Panty Party is coming to Switch worldwide sometime in April or May of this year.
Now, if there's ever a video game that should be taken to court. For gratuity in any sense of the word, it's Panty Party. Panty Party is going to be up there with the Mortal Kombat of the world as far as its impact on society, I think. So
I mean, it's a game where you play as a pair of panties and you shoot other panties with a gun.
Everybody knows that, and I mean everybody knows that violence in video games clearly creates serial murderers. It's obvious. The stats are there. Science is there. It's a fact. It happens. I mean, look at Master Piscina. He created a video game and he's killing people in bars. I mean,
he's the most bloodthirsty man I know.
He just told us that when you get into a fight, you have to be prepared to murder. So, and that's all because of video games. So
nuts off, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So it's only you can only draw the conclusion here that Panty Party is going to create laundry enthusiasts.
Are you in a whole different route than what I did?
You know my skill you have to kill somebody with a panty.
I'm sure you possess it, Master Pizzino.
See, now we'll know his calling card. If he ever goes on a spree, their mouths are going to be stuffed with a pair of panties. We'll know.
Uphill sign.
It'll be us. Luckily, only about 500 people listen to the show, so you'll be all right.
Call it a pantality.
Oh.
All right, Andy, you have something in store for us today.
Oh, God. So last week I had a little trivia game for our now good friend of the show, Tony Chung, Sub-Zero for MK11. We did a game I called Test Your Right, which is a trivia game. But for this week, I'm going in a whole different direction. This is called Rest Your Might.
Okay.
I'm going to propose 5 different scenarios.
Uh-huh.
That's going to spotlight each of the master's various MK character roles.
Okay.
And you're each going to improv what they would do in these scenarios.
Okay.
And then our listeners will vote for their favorite ones. How's that sound?
Sounds good. I like it.
All right. So this will appeal to the actor in Steven, so he has a leg up a little bit. But Master, you do kick ass. So you have that working for you at the very least. All right. Here we go. For the very first scenario, Johnny Cage has just lost the Oscar for Best Actor. Oh, poor Johnny Cage. And he decides to hijack the winner's acceptance speech. So, Steven, you go first. What does he say? What does he do?
Oh, man.
Improv, baby.
Well,
come on.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think that that's complete horseshit. We all know that Johnny Cage, right here, me, the man, are the true winner here. I mean, my performance in Black Hawk Delta is just second to none. Did you see my scene with Meryl Streep? I had a tear. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Cage. No. Do you know who I am? I'm Johnny Cage. I could take out any person, any security that you have over there. No, I see the guy behind me. I see him. He's not getting it. You're not getting this trophy. None of you are getting this trophy.
Let's throw it there, Mr. Cage. All right. Master.
Johnny Cage walks up. Looks at it, pops him, and just takes it and walks away.
Yes,
that would be old school Johnny Cage.
Does he go up and then do the split and pop him right in the nuts? And then as the trophy falls, he catches it when he's in mid split.
I would say he does the uppercut.
Oh, nice!
And as the person is lift off his feet and the trophy goes up in the air, he just grabs it with his left hand, puts his shades on with his right hand, blows a kiss to him, and walks off stage.
See, I went with the Hollywood actor side of his personality.
Right. Yeah. You went with Johnny Cage in number four.
Right, he did. He went full-blown ego Hollywood maniac on that one. You went OG Cage. All right, let's go for the next one here. Scorpion and Sub-Zero crash a karaoke party. What song would they sing? Duets only, please. Steven, you first.
They would sing.
Wow. Okay, hold on.
I am my own worst enemy.
Oh, that is a good choice. Can you counter that, Steven? That's a pretty good choice.
So here's the scenario. They get called up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are calling up Sub-Zero and Scorpion.
No, they crashed. They crashed. There's no announcement.
No, they sneak. They sneak.
They ninja sneak in?
Yeah, they ninja sneak their names on like the thing. You know what I mean? Like
a little piece of paper.
Announcement.
They enter themselves in all sneaky. It's a private party. It's obviously a private party for a big, big Japanese corporation because they're crazy about the karaoke. And the Sub-Zero and Scorpion. And then everybody looks around, huh? And then their backs are to the crowd. They're there. They have their arms down. And of course you hear, everybody, yeah, rock your body. And it's not only Sub-Zero and Scorpion, but you got Noob, you got all the ninjas, all the characters. They slowly fade in. The lights are coming up, and it's 5 of them there. And of course they sing Everybody by whichever boy band that was. That's what
Backstreet
happens.
Boys, right?
There we go.
I don't know if it was Backstreet. Yeah, because they say Backstreet's back, right? Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
My boy band knowledge is lacking.
Yes, as is mine.
I am totally retro.
Well, speaking about Noob,
yes.
Let's get on to Mr. Saibot. So Noob Saibot creates a killer shadowboxing app.
Nice.
And is about to film his first commercial. How does that go?
Where the hell did you come up with this shit?
I've been drinking, so keep that in mind.
Eases the pain. Eases the pain.
I warned you ahead of this podcast.
He'd probably walk out and say, wait a minute. The lighting's all wrong. There's too much lighting. Too much lighting.
Oh, that's perfect.
I imagine. So I think as graceful as he is in martial arts, I think he's a fumbling idiot when it comes to like performance. So I could see him being really stoic. He'd be like, "Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Do you want to play a kick-ass action game with you shadow box? Oh boy. Okay. So a buddy of mine in a
he's got like no confidence. He seems very perturbed.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When it comes to kicking ass, you know I know how to do it. It's real easy. Comes second nature. But now you can get in on the action with Noob's shadow boxing app." And it's very simple. All you need is a $6,000 VR setup. And very, very, you could fight the monks from, whew, boy, we really should have hired somebody to do this commercial, I think.
Johnny Cage.
I actually know a guy. He's kind of big deal. Big action star. Oh. We're still rolling. Okay.
Yes. I'm going to piggyback off your little gruff voice like you ate a pack of cigarettes.
Funny story. I did do that next one.
Right. And going to my next one, which is Smoke, funnily enough. So Smoke becomes a spokesperson for an anti-smoking campaign. Take it away, boys.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. There's going to be some sort of group out there that's not going to like this. the American Cancer Society is going to come get me, I think.
Yep.
You're trying to prevent cancer, though. That's your whole thing.
It has to have something with Ninja Vanish in there.
Hello, I am Smoke. I am here to tell you.
Oh, God.
That
South Park.
I have spent my entire career giving other people fatalities. Little did I know that Smoke would be my fatality.
And then it just fades. To quit, call 311 now.
Actually, that was pretty good. A little tear. A little tear was rolling down my.
I know. Yeah,
you heard Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
Will you remember me?
Right.
Oh boy. All right, and I've saved the best for last. Speaking about animals. Oh boy. So Reptile has just turned down a spot in Mortal Kombat 11 to instead go to the Galapagos Islands to inseminate some iguanas.
Oh my God.
He must now break the news to Shang Tsung.
Hey, Shang. I gotta go, baby. You know, I gotta get my groove on. He has to say it in a totally 70s porn way.
Yeah.
He's the Ron Jeremy of the ninja
pants. Collar. You got the tongue for a reason, right?
So here's the thing. I was thinking of doing the Mortal Kombat thing again, but you know what? It turns out I haven't really performed in several decades, and I think it would be a vast improvement of my sexual situation if I could just spread my seed a little bit. What do you say I take a little vacation down to the Galapagos? I hear there's plenty of lizard folk down there, and I create you an army of lizard people. Think about it.
That's it.
An army of lizard people.
And I think with that, we end the show. And that was Rest Your might.
Well, thank you, Master Piscina. It has been an absolute pleasure hanging out with you. You're
Andy Steven, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I learned quite a bit, and I want to do more research into the making of Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2, because it's fascinating, the stories you guys have. And, you know, if this was a 6-hour podcast, I'm sure we could have filled the entire 6 hours with stories about the making of Mortal Kombat. So thank you so much for sharing those stories with us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, and you guys have a good night.
All right, folks. Nintendo Dual Screens podcast is part of the Proven Gamer podcast network, which includes Trophy Whores, a PlayStation podcast, and Game Stuff, a general games discussion podcast. If you want to support Proven Gamer, go to provengamer.com and, you know, just browse around the website. Do stuff. If you want to follow the show on social media, we are on Twitter and Instagram at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And Master Piscina, where can people find you on social media?
On Facebook, they can find me at Master Piscina. Instagram is Master D Piscina, and Twitter, Master Piscina.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. One more time, I do want to thank you one last time. Thank you so much. This has been an absolute blast to do. And you are welcome on this show anytime you want, anytime at all. And I hope that we can meet up soon next time you're in town, grab a beer. Maybe I'll just get into an altercation that you'll have to settle for me.
Yeah, we'll put it on YouTube.
Andy, is there anything you want to say before we go?
This is the 2 of 4 for our Mortal Kombat month celebration.
Mm-hmm.
We got plenty of surprise guests along the way. So just stay tuned for some more magic coming your way on NDS Podcast.
That is it, folks. This has been Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast, episode 94 for the week. Wow, we're getting close to 100, Andy. Oh, boy.
We really are. I'm getting
six
nervous.
Weeks away. Holy
oh,
crap.
God. Oh, God.
For the week of April 15th, if you want to listen to our pre-show shenanigans and our post-show shenanigans, please head over to patreon.com/NDS podcast, where you can get an extra hour of content every week. But until next time, that's it. We're done. Take care. And as always, please be excellent to each other.